Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call a roll.
Roll call for Monday, February 7th. Barnard, Bebout,
here.
Burns,
here.
Case,
here.
Christensen,
here.
Coe,
here.
Cooper,
here.
Dockstader,
here.
Driscoll,
here.
Emmerich,
here.
Esquivel,
here.
Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Hines, Jennings,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Martin,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Anderson,
here.
Barnard,
here.
30 present.
Prayer by Father Conkleton.
Let's pray. Most Holy God, as we begin this fifth week of this legislative session, we ask for renewed vitality and enthusiasm to do well the business of the people of this great state. Pour forth upon us this day a portion of your eternal wisdom, and grant us the gifts of good judgment, insight, and patience. As this is the last day for us to reintroduce a bill to the Committee of the Whole that is originating here in the Senate, make us efficient and effective with our time so that we can accomplish all that we desire. Guide our deliberations, discussions, and votes, and let us have a fruitful day so that when we lay our heads down tonight, we may be satisfied with all that we have done with your divine assistance. We ask this and all these things through you who lives and reigns forever and ever. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will a reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 4th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Our doctor for the day is Dr. Gada, M.D. from Cheyenne. I don't know if the doctor's on the... Thank you very much, doctor, for your service today. We have a nurse for the day. Two nurses for the day. Annette Cantlin and Lori Morgan from the Wyoming State Hospital at Evanston. And I don't know if they're here or not. But anyway, we say thank you to those ladies. On this day in Wyoming history, in 1926, the Russian Ballet performed at the University of Wyoming. And on this day in U.S. history, in 1795, the 11th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution ratified affirms powers of the states. And also, members of the body, you see that we have a new page with us this morning, and her name is Lauren Sweeten, and Lauren, I think, comes to us from Chugwater. Lauren, we have a little gift for you if you'll come over here by the guest microphone that we'd like to present to you as you begin your service to the Senate. Lauren, you'll see that many of the members of the body wear small pins like this to as representation of being members of this body. What we'd like to give you as you begin your service is this small gift, and it's a pin of the Wyoming seal that perhaps you would enjoy wearing during your two-week service here and thereafter. So with that, we would hope that you would accept this and would wear it proudly as you go ahead and continue your service with the Senate in the next 2 weeks. Welcome. We hope that you have an enjoyable time. Messages from the House.
February the 4th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 231, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 226, Raw Agricultural Commodity Inspection Exemptions. Ayes 24, noes 32, excused 4. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Bills on first reading. House Bill 189, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 189, Foreclosure and Redemption Revisions, and Act Relating to Real Property, sponsored by Representative Stubson. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 189 has been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 255, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 255, Veteran Tax Exemption, and Act Relating to Taxation and Revenue, sponsored by Representative Patton. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 255 has been assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 93, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 93, School Unification Student Count Deletion, and Act Relating to the Creation of Unified School Districts, sponsored by the Tribal Relations Committee. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 52, noes 5, excused 3.
House Bill 93 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 214, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 214, Hathaway Scholarship College Attendance, an Act Relating to Education, sponsored by Representative Buchanan. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 42, noes 15, excused 3.
House Bill 214 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 156, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 156, Grand Teton National Park Transfer of State Lands, an Act Relating to State Lands, sponsored by Representative Petroff. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 46, noes 11, excused 3.
House Bill 156 has been assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 179, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 179, Energy Improvement Program, an Act Relating to Local Improvement, sponsored by Representative Prethoff. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 40, noes 17, excused 3.
House Bill 179 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 242, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 242, Insurance Surplus Lines, an Act Relating to Insurance, sponsored by Representative Illaway. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 242 has been assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Reports from standing committees.
February the 7th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 29, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. No, Senator Byrne, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 7th, 2011. Mr. President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 30, engrossed, reports with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Excuse, Senator Byrne, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 7th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 75, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Excuse, Senator Byrne, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 7th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 79, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Senator Burns, excuse, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 4th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 108, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, and Jennings. No, Senator Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 4th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 110, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, and Jennings. No, Senator Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Senate File 52, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 52, Teacher Tenure, sponsored by Senator Cole.
There is an amendment. It's the second amendment to second reading on Senate File 52. The first amendment was attached before the bill was held over. So if the reading clerk would read in second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 52 at this time, that's the Bebout amendment.
Senate File 52, second reading amendment number 2 to substitute bill number 1. Delete
Bebout, would you like to move and address this amendment, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 52. Members of the Senate, this is a bill that's generated a lot of interest, and rightfully so, by a lot of people in our state. And I, like most of you, have received a lot of emails and correspondence, et cetera. I had an opportunity to go home this weekend and wanted to talk to some of my local constituency about this particular piece of legislation and talk to teachers, a lot of them friends for a long time, since high school, in fact. And no surprise, most of them thought this was a bad bill. I talked to administrators. No surprise, most of them thought it was a good bill. I also, it's sort of an interesting thing when I talked to some of the general public, and their feeling was that we should be talking about tenure, maybe doing some things and changing it. And as I listened to that, and of course, and I thought about it and reflected on it, you know, teaching is a profession that really is different than a lot of things that we as professionals do in the state of Wyoming. And some of these emails I got, and I tried to read all of them, and they were well written and really made some good points. And one of the points that really struck home to me was the fact that if we did the one year at will, that clearly those teachers would not be able to do what they really want to do, which is teach, and there would be some undue pressures that could possibly put on them by a disgruntled parent, by a principal that for whatever reason did not like that particular teacher, or even went so far as to include the school board. And so I started thinking about that. In fact, one of the discussions I had, Mr. President, was had a person that had a suggestion, and he said, well, you know, if we had it for every 4 years, maybe that might make sense. And I started thinking about that. And that's the purpose of this amendment. And what it does, and I tracked it in, and I to the best of my ability, believe it really does that, and it's kind of hard because we have an engrossed bill, and it's a complicated issue. What it says is that we will continue to have the probationary period for up to 3 years, and so we all know that that continues. And then for those teachers that are in the process now, they will be given a four-year contract, and that four-year contract, they will be treated just the way they have been in the past. All the due process, et cetera, is included in that. As far as the dismissal during the school year, the existing language in the proposed legislation would stay the same. And if you remember the cheat sheet we had the other day, with pay, without pay, none of that changes. The real critical part of this is that after that particular teacher has been on their four-year contract, that at that point in time, they would, in fact, be offered a renewal contract, or they may not be offered that renewal contract. And if that, in fact, were to happen, they would be treated the same as a termination that's in the existing bill, but only for the one-year period. And, Mr. Chairman, so they would then, in fact, be granted a four-year contract. There again, in that particular condition, would be granted and guaranteed all the rights that they have now today. So what it really does, it says, you know, if we're going to do this and have some serious discussion about tenure, let's don't go back and try to take away the opportunity for those teachers to be able to teach. Let's give them some protection, and it's a four-year deal. And I think that makes sense. It's kind of a compromise. You know, if there's a disgruntled parent out there or somebody that's upset about something, that will smooth over, possibly go away. They just don't have the opportunity just to go in there and fire a good teacher without what I consider to be good cause. And I think this may go a long ways to solving some of the consideration all those people out there that want to talk about tenure may have. It still protects and affords them an opportunity to what I consider due process. And in the terms of existing law, nothing changes for 4 years. It's just after the four-year period, then there's a situation that might exist. So one other thing, too, Mr. President, if a new teacher were to become law, a new teacher comes in, they have the three-year probationary period, then, in fact, they would be offered the four-year contract, just like they are now. So theoretically, they have 7 years in the system to make their case that they're a good teacher. I think this really goes a long way to protecting our teachers that I think do a wonderful job, and also talks about the issue of tenure. Maybe it's a way to maybe get rid of some of the teachers we think should be probably eliminated without hurting the good teachers. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Coe?
Well, Mr. President, I had a great visit with the good senator from Fremont County, and this does soften the bill up a lot. And maybe makes it more palatable for some, maybe doesn't change your opinion of the bill. I will say this much. I had all these emails just like all you did, and 99% of them were special interest emails. And I can tell you in my discussions, and I had some emails, and I know other senators did, that said, why don't you represent your constituents? I can tell you I am representing my constituents. 75 to 80% of my constituency, I can tell you, supports doing away with teacher tenure. But I urge you to support, back on the amendment, I urge you to support this amendment. We'll probably see some more amendments tomorrow. I've got another one I think I'm going to bring tomorrow. We'll probably have a good discussion. This bill has got some legs to it. Maybe not as many legs as I'd like to see on it. But I do urge that you support this amendment. It does soften it up. It does take away that argument that administrators could arbitrarily do away with somebody because their kid's not playing on the football team. So I'd urge you to support this amendment. Remember one thing. I truthfully believe that the people in Wyoming want us to do something about teacher tenure.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to support this amendment also because I think it's a step in the right direction, but I'd still be worried about being in that teacher's class on that fourth year. I think that's going to be the four-year cycle where they're not going to really stick their neck out. They're not going to be creative. They're not going to be innovative because in that fourth year, if they do make that administrator mad or the teacher group mad or some parents or somebody a bit angry, Mr. President, then that's going to be the year when they can get terminated without much cause. So it's certainly a step in the right direction. I'll be supporting the amendment, but I don't think it's the solution. Thank you, Mr. President.
Other comments in regard to this amendment? Seeing none. This is the second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 52, the BBOT amendment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. They're back on the bill, seeing no further amendments. Senate File 52 Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 107, second reading of the bill. Senate File.
Senate File 107, Energy Impacted County Roads Program, sponsored by Senator Meyer.
Senate File 107, there are no amendments. Is there any discussion in regarding this bill? Senate File 107, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 121, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design, sponsored by Senator Bebout.
There are no amendments. Senate File 121, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 125, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 125, Healthcare Facilities Crisis Management, sponsored by Senator Scott.
There are several amendments. The first amendment is the Scott Amendment, Amendment Number 1, Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 125. I'd ask the reading clerk to read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 125, Second Reading Amendment 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Scott, would you like to move this amendment? Speak to it, please.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this amendment, what it does is that we discovered in the process of dealing with a particular circumstance we had at Casper, we discovered that we were really not prepared in case we suddenly lost a nursing home, and we didn't have the authorities that we needed to deal with the problem. And frankly, that problem extends to more than just if you had financial difficulties in one, but if you had some kind of a disaster, a fire in the nursing home, a tornado that came through and destroyed it, and you had to suddenly move the residents elsewhere. We need to have the ability to deal with that, and we need to have the ability to spend a certain amount of money relocating those people, because you're going to have to do it on an emergency basis. And, Mr. President, what this amendment does is it says if they're, in addition to the way it's introduced, it says if they are unable to continue operations due to a natural or man-made disaster, then you can. The governor has some authority to act. It's a broadening of it, Mr. President, but I think it's one that gives the governor some authority he really needs if we should happen to have that kind of a disaster in one of these facilities. It fits well with the more important amendment that comes next, and would enable the governor to essentially put in a crisis manager who could handle the problems of getting a large group of people moved to some other facility that could care for them if you had one of these disasters. So I'd urge adoption of the amendment, Mr. President.
Other discussion or questions? The question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 125. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Brings us now to the second amendment, the Perkins Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 125, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, lines 18 through 24.
Senator Perkins, would you like to move and speak to this amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 125 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. What we're doing in this is paring this back and hopefully addressing a number of the concerns that were expressed the other day. First of all, what we would do is insert on page 2, line 17, we insert appoint a crisis manager. So what would happen is one of the things the governor could do before the governor would impose, it may do, doesn't have to,
but in addition, assisting on local and community support could also appoint a crisis manager. The next thing this does is goes back and significantly changes the next parts. What we're doing is on page 2, line 18, we're simply taking it, loan state funds or authorize the crisis manager to expend state funds as provided by this paragraph. And you can read there in the amendment that in no event shall the financial assistant under this paragraph exceed the amount required to allow the transitional efforts of subparagraphs A or B of this paragraph for a time not to exceed 21 days. And funds, and so then what you have, so you're, what we're doing is replacing, there you see a substantial change to paragraph Romanet 2, and A and B are going to be changed significantly. Then what A and B do is then two things. The only thing that you're going to be able to do is provide financial assistance and appoint this crisis manager to either one under the new subparagraph A would be to only facilitate the early transition of patients to another facility. So all you're talking about is taking patients out of one facility that's now either ceased operations because of financial or other man-made crisis that's not going to be working anymore. To allow that transition to happen, it would have to happen within 21 days. Or the other one is provide temporary assistance necessary to permit a plan to be developed for the orderly transition of the operation of the facility to another. That would be the new B. So for 21 days, you could give somebody enough breathing room to find out that whether or not you could find someone else to come in and take over or otherwise move the patients. So that's what this bill does. It would then goes back and deletes paragraph 3 about the order of Medicaid and subsection 4 about ordering Medicaid or other state programs to pay more promptly. So it eliminates those two. So all we're down to now is ultimately two things. One, that you can provide for the early transition of patients to another facility or give a little breathing room so you can have a plan of how this would transition to somebody else. But in no events can the assistance be for longer than 21 days. So what you have is you have a bailout, but it's a short bailout, simply long enough to make sure that the patients in the home are taken care of. And with that, it obviously scales back significantly the other broader interpretations in the bill, and I think puts us in more of what all of us were talking about, is just the ability to step in an emergency and make sure that people are taken care of and transition to another facility. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, and this is a question for the sponsor. As I read this amendment, in addition to doing the great things that he's proposed here, but it also eliminates the criteria for filing for bankruptcy when it eliminates the standing committee amendment. And my question is, in terms of who gets into this program, understand there's got to be some criteria, something that says now they're really in trouble. And that's why that was put into the standing committee amendment. And I'll just use the example that is putting this bill forward. The testimony in committee is no one has seen the audited financials from the institution in question in Natrona County. We're taking it as a matter of faith, and I have great faith that this institution really is in trouble. And that it is in dire straits. It seems to me that the bankruptcy standard says it's bona fide, and we're eliminating that standard as I read this. Just a question for the sponsor. And Mr. Chairman, this is second reading, and I think as a courtesy, I would ask that this amendment be divided, and I'm not sure it can because I want a response, but I think I'll ask the division to be lines 1 through 21 as division 1 and lines 22 through 24 as being division number 2. See what I'm doing, Drew? Mr. Chairman, what I'm trying to do is focus on the elimination of the standing committee amendment number 1 to 125, which would be Division II.
Okay, give me just a second,
yes, sir.
Senator Schiffer, to look at this.
Drew, do you see what I'm doing? That gives you a chance to respond.
I believe that that is divisible. And
Mr. President, then we're on Division One.
Okay, and would you repeat that division again for the body just before we go into it?
Yes, Mr. President, it's lines 2 through lines 21 is Division One, and then lines 22 through 24 or 25. That's Division Two.
Go ahead, Senator Schiffer. I think we have a clear understanding of the division. Would you address Division One now?
Division One, Mr. President, I support Division One.
Okay, let's confine our conversation now to Division One being lines 1 through 21 of the amendment. Senator Scott, would you like to speak to that division?
Yes, Mr. President. Speaking on and for this division, this is a major reduction in the scope of the bill. And frankly, we were listening the other day and I'm trying to understand the concerns that were raised. So whereas it's not perhaps everything we might want, this gives enough authority to deal with a crisis so that you didn't have people just left without essential care because something went wrong in the process, and it gives you the needs for a transition. With regard to the question that was raised with the bankruptcy, frankly, if you're facilitating the orderly transition, looking at subparagraph A, I don't think it makes much difference whether they're bankrupt or not. They're going out of business, and you're trying to get the people somewhere else. Or with the amendment that passed a moment ago, there's been some kind of a disaster, and they're involuntarily out of business, and you need to get the people somewhere else. And under those circumstances, basically, the state's expending money, probably for ambulances as much as anything, to transport some of these people and to provide some temporary shelter. I think maybe on third reading, it might be useful to add the bankruptcy language to subparagraph B, if that was a matter of concern, and that would be a simple amendment. But, Mr. President, I do urge adoption of the first half of this amendment.
Okay. Is there other comments in regard to this first division being lines 1 through 21 of the amendment? Senator Rossfest, would you like to address the first division, please?
For the sponsor of the amendment, if you see this as taking away any possibility of financial gain by either the creditors that are trying to get back their money from the bankruptcy or the individual or entity that is going into bankruptcy, it seems to me that it goes a great deal in that direction, but I'm not sure if that would eliminate that. And my sort of second related question would be if it would be useful to potentially put some sort of a primary lien on the bankruptcy as it's in progress to allow the state to recoup any costs before any other creditors that might be trying to take action on this bankruptcy. I hope that made some sense.
Other questions or other comments in regard to this first division before the sponsor of that division takes his final time? Senator Perkins, would you like to speak to this first division?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. President. With respect to the first division, listening to the conversation the other day, the question comes, how much or how involved should the state be in a bankruptcy? And I think the answer to that question is the state ultimately, what the attempt of this amendment do is to take and bring this back down to the essence. What is really the essence of the program or the thought? The thought is to simply provide for the orderly transition of individuals who are in a very tenuous circumstance. In these cases, you've got individuals who oftentimes are not ambulatory. They can't move. They need particular care. And so if in the event you have a catastrophic kind of shutdown of one of these, is to simply provide that ability in a very short process to make sure that these are taken to someone else. When it comes to bankruptcy, we would hope, and listening to the good senator from Albany County, you talked about bankruptcy the other day, taking that to heart, you would hope that the governor would, through the attorney general, would provide and obtain the necessary bankruptcy expertise to assist him and in his crisis manager if he were to appoint one and he were to enter into this, because he doesn't have to, he simply may. But that he would then enter that, and he's going to advance funds, that he would do so hopefully as a post-petition creditor of some sort. But ultimately, if we're down to just the health or safety of these individual patients and somebody has to step in because there hasn't been other provision made, to simply at that point, I don't know that you can obviously file bankruptcy, emergency bankruptcy petitions very quickly. You can get the right people in there. And so doing something post-petition, hopefully you can be a post-petition creditor to some degree and have those protections, because if you can provide some post-petition bankruptcy petition credit, there are some very high protections, and they come very high in the feeding order about doing that. You would hope that the governor and his crisis manager would not be doing this to reimburse anybody else or to help other creditors, but simply to make sure that these patients are taken care of in an orderly manner. In doing that, I can tell you in the current situation that we had obtained permission, and they have had discussions with the auditors of the nursing home, and so they're trying to get the best financial information that they can. And as they're developing this plan, this has come up on a higher portion on their radar, mostly because of the discussions we've been having up here, recognizing this and trying to find that right path to get to where we want to be without exposing the state to undue liability or undue exposure, either financially or from a liability other liability standpoint. So I don't think that this gets away or does away with the governor's responsibility to look at that and act in the most appropriate manner. But it does simplify it and get it down to its bare essence, which is let's take care of these people for up to make sure this happens, but we're not going to do it for more than 3 weeks, because this is simply about getting the care for the people that are on the ground.
Are there other comments and questions in regard to this first division? I think Senator Scott, this is your second time on the first division. Go ahead.
Mr. President, and I rise really for a point of order and a parliamentary inquiry. The rule is that a senator can only speak twice on the same subject in the same day. In the past, in the practice in the Senate has been generally when an amendment is divided, that your proponent will move the amendment to start with and spoken to with it generally. And then when it's divided, the ruling in the past has been that the proponent can speak twice to each division, and that the talk where the amendment as a whole was moved does not count against that twice. Is that
consistent with my thinking? Intention? And you can go ahead on that premise.
Okay, that's because I was really inquiring whether the sponsor of the amendment had a second shot of. Available in the first division.
He does, and I'll call on him when we feel that we've addressed all the questions so that he can respond to the...
Okay.
So Senator Schiffer will have another opportunity on this division.
Yeah. Mr. President, that's all I rose for, was that point of order.
Okay.
Clarify that.
Yes, I think we're consistent. Are there any other questions or comments in regard to this first division before Senator Schiffer rises to speak to Division 1?
Question.
Senator Schiffer does not desire to speak any further. Then a question before us is in regard to Division Number 1 of the Second Reading Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 125, Division being lines 1 through 21 of the amendment. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That portion number one of the amendment, has passed. We are now on the second division. Senator Schiffer, would you like to address the second division, being lines 22 to 24 of the amendment? Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. President. And what I want to do is ask the sponsors, when we delete the standing committee amendment, we delete the prerequisite that the institution be in bankruptcy. And in my mind, the reason we put that in is to set the bar for who's eligible to receive the benefit of this proposed bill. There's no question that nursing home care is a very difficult, the reimbursement rates are difficult, the level of care is difficult, staffing is difficult. We've dealt with that for as long as I've been in this Senate. But it seemed to me that was the bar we used to say, once you get there, the state is willing to step in. This amendment eliminates, as I read it, that standard. And particularly, as I said earlier, I asked during committee, has anybody looked at the audited financials from the institution in question? Nobody's seen them. I don't know that it makes me nervous, but it makes me nervous. It's got to be open. There's got to be a standard, and the standard was bankruptcy. So I'm trying to figure out what to do.
Senator Scott, the second portion of the amendment being line 22-24, would you like to speak to that, please?
Mr. Chairman, I would. And what it eliminates, the standing committee had applied the bankruptcy standard, which was found on page 2 of the original bill as introduced, and the standing committee amendment applied that to the ability of the governor to order a higher Medicaid reimbursement rate. And what this portion of this amendment does is eliminate the ability of the governor under this bill to order a higher Medicaid reimbursement rate. So the bankruptcy requirements there becomes irrelevant. We aren't going to do that in this case. The place, Mr. President, that I think raises the concern is in the language in the original bill, making sure that carries over into the subparagraph B that we just voted on. And I think, Mr. President, that's a separate third reading amendment. So I would urge adoption of this particular amendment. I understand where my colleague from Johnson County is coming from, but since we eliminated that provision that was in the standing committee amendment, we eliminated the whole ability that applied to it. It's not relevant anymore, and this amendment would be perfectly good.
Senator Nicholas, would you like to speak to the second part of this amendment?
Mr. President, on and for the amendment, what this amendment does is remove entirely that provision of the original bill that allowed the governor to pull the switch to increase Medicaid reimbursement up to 100%. It seems to me that's a pretty dangerous role to allow the governor to ever increase Medicaid reimbursement. Now, the governor can do that, folks, practically speaking. We don't set the reimbursement rates by statute, and there's a tremendous amount of discretion that's exercised by the Office of Medicaid. Having said that, there have been times where we've ordered or demanded, particularly in obstetrics and gynecology, higher Medicaid reimbursement rates. But generally speaking, Thushin, I think, would be a dangerous precedent. So this eliminates that. I'd urge your support. If we do adopt this, then we're back to a couple issues to talk about on third reading, and we can talk about that later. I think we'll stay.
Thank you. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, second part of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. While I think maybe we should adopt this amendment, given, well, I'm not really sure. part of the problem we got with this, when we adopted the first part of this amendment, we appointed a crisis manager. Now, if you delete the standing committee amendment to this, you delete crisis manager language that was in the standing committee amendment that I've had question in my mind as to what this crisis manager is or is not. And I had envisioned this crisis manager to be something more akin to a receiver in bankruptcy or something along that line. But what the standing committee, the first standing committee amendment did was, in paragraph 5, was to appoint a crisis manager to represent the state's interest. And so when we delete the standing committee amendment, you're going to be deleting that provision. We're going to have this a little bit more vague crisis manager in Romanet 2 on page that we just adopted. So I assume that we'll probably have to come back on third reading somehow to deal with this crisis manager to figure out what this crisis manager is or is not and what the duty is, who pays for the crisis manager. But that's the problem that I envision with this crisis manager and the way we've handled it at this point in time.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I seem to be agreeing with everybody in part, but disagreeing in part also. If I look at, we are taking out the 100% funding for our Medicaid dollars to the facility. And we're replacing it with two things, Part A and Part B in the amendment. Part A, I really have no problems with. That's just the orderly transition of patients. But Part B, if you look at line 7, it says to expend state funds as provided in this paragraph. Now, there's no limitation on the state funds. So you can expend as many funds as necessary to provide temporary assistance to permit a plan to be developed for the orderly transition of the operation of the facility to another. So what that says is that you can spend 150% of the Medicaid if you need to do it for orderly transition. So, you know, although I think this amendment is well-meaning, if you go into those two lines and looking in subparagraph B, there is absolutely no restriction.
Senator Meyer, I'm not sure whether you're addressing the first portion or the second portion of the amendment.
Well, Mr. President, I am as far as the deletion of the bankruptcy and why I'm speaking against division number 2 as it relates to the current language and why we need to delete this and keep bankruptcy in it. And so because that does restrict us, if we delete this, If we vote against this, then we still have the restriction at 100%. If we don't delete this, we don't have the restriction at 100%. And so I'm speaking against this division and ask the body to vote no, because without this restriction, the bankruptcy, then we have no restriction at all. And I think we need some work on third reading to sort all of this out. But as it leaves second reading, it's better to keep the language of bankruptcy in the bill, and so I'm speaking against this division.
Other comments in regard to this second division of the amendment? Senator Perkins, would you like to address the second division?
Sure, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think that the comments that have been made are right on point. If you go and look at the Standing Committee amendment that was there, what you were talking about in under the Standing Committee amendment was the paragraph 3 talked about that if the facility in crisis had filed for liquidation or reorganization under the federal bankruptcy law, that the crisis manager or the governor could order Medicaid or other state programs to pay the full cost of any service related to received from the facility, including a reasonable allowance for debt service on any loan from the state or other organization provided all private per diem rates shall be or have been raised proportionally. So what that's saying is not only could you pay 100% of the per diem rate under the standing committee amendment that was approved, it also says you could pay, including in addition to that, you could pay a reasonable allowance for debt service.
And so what this amendment does is it strikes all that out. So you couldn't do that. You couldn't provide money for reasonable debt service. You couldn't technically pay 100% because that's what the Standing Committee Amendment provided for, and Division 2 strikes that language out of the bill. So what you have then are left with the restrictions that we just approved in number 1. Now, we could tighten those down. But the other thing I might say about bankruptcy is, in talking with the Good Center from Albany County, one of the things that would happen, and particularly in cases, the one that kind of brought this to light, is the creditor, the state is a significant creditor. And so the state, as a creditor, the state has the ability, is probably one of the largest creditors, that are there to actually force the facility into bankruptcy. And that probably more often than not, between unemployment loans or taxes of one sort or another, workers' compensation has been paid. If the state is a creditor, the state can do an involuntary bankruptcy and do that. You would hope that, again, with the in visiting with the good senator from Albany County, the governor would go out, and one of the first things he would do here, the attorney general would hire a good bankruptcy attorney who would guide them through this process. And the governor, quite frankly, would be crazy to do a lot of this stuff unless they had filed bankruptcy, especially to do something, and obviously the scope of what he's able to do has been significantly reduced with the amendment, with the division we just approved, a moment ago. So with that, I think it's a step in the right direction. It pulls us down and restricts us further. We could expand and go back and visit about the crisis manager issues. We simply took the crisis manager from the Standing Committee Amendment that Division 2 gets rid of, and we kind of put it back where we could point a standing, we appoint the crisis manager. We can put some additional restrictions on that crisis manager if we feel like we need to in third reading. But ultimately, that was just lifting it from one place and putting it to another so it would reappear. With that, I hope that answers the questions. But, Mr. President, with that, I it's a significant reduction in the scope of this thing, refines it down, and would ask for your favorable consideration on this.
Senator Nicholas, in regard to the second portion of the amendment, I believe this is your second time on the second division.
Thank you, Mr. President. It is my second time. Folks, on and for the amendment, the primary purpose of this amendment, as pointed out, is to eliminate the ability of the governor to increase rates, particularly during a transition period where the facility may be operated by the same person that created the problem. And I submit to you, you can't just throw money into these problems and resolve them. They're problems that are ordinarily much deeper than that. With respect to bankruptcy, when we go to that issue, we need to be very careful with respect to the notion, the use of the word bankruptcy. It is a very broad term. It includes everything from a Chapter 7 liquidation to a Chapter 11 reorganization. And ordinarily, it would not be a good practice to go into what we call a debtor in possession. That is, if I've got a problem and I know I'm going down, I run in, I file a bankruptcy, and I am the debtor in possession. I'm not the trustee, but I'm the person that gets to control things. Now, the interest of a debtor in possession is often trying to get his bills paid, particularly if you have, for example, what we call 941 IRS bills. Those are your withholding taxes that you've not paid on behalf of your employees. You may have personal liability. And your interest is, if you have equity, to try to get the equity out of the institution. If you have these 941 taxes, to get all your anything that you're personally liable to get them resolved. Part of the concern I have is that if state is doing is offering transition funding to help somebody get out of their personal liability or to help them extend the pain before we find a solution, that's not a good place for us to be. So the word bankruptcy is a potent word. It may make you feel good, but it isn't, I think, what folks intended. On third reading, we need to take a specific analysis of if we're going to get in this business of making loans, at what time during the transition phase you do it. What you really want to do is get help to get them on the other side, where somebody that's competent comes in and has already reorganized, and we're going to help them go forward to carry forward, but making sure the doors stay open. But the central purpose of the amendment is a good one, and that gets us out of the business of just increasing rates to help a failed institution stay in management longer.
Other comments in regard to this second division? Seeing none, Senator Schiffer, okay. Then our question then before us is in regard to the second division of the second reading, amendment number 2, to Senate file 125. All those in favor of the second division, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That portion of the amendment has passed as well. There are no further amendments on Senate file 125, having been read two separate times.
Back on the bill itself?
Yes, back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. And folks, as we sit here and look at the bill as it goes forward, I think what the sponsors of the bill have shown to us is that we may have to take a proactive assessment of how we're going to deal with failed nursing homes or nursing homes that are in problem. The couple of concerns I still have as we move through on the assessment of how we're going to treat with this. One of the issues is my colleague from to the left on Appropriations Committee talked about, and that is, have we just created a blank check for the governor to go out and write loans to fail institutions? And what makes that more perplexing is that what we're talking about is what we've generically talked about as the transitional effort. And as I think of the transitional effort, if you have a failed management, and typically what you're wanting to do is say, look, you need to sell the institution to somebody who's a competent manager. If you're a nonprofit organization or if you're an organization that has driven this home into bankruptcy and there's a structural problem out there, what we want to do is keep the doors open, keep care being provided at a competent level, and then find a new entity to come in and acquire the institution. As I've said, typically the entity in possession has contradicting motives. Their motive is to pay the debts so they have no debts to worry about, particularly if they've guaranteed those debts. They want to, if they think there's an equity in the building, they might want to try to get their equity out. And it seems to me that as we're looking forward, we ought to be able to find a solution where the state doesn't have to pour money in. And when we pour money in is just as important as how we put it in or the timing of it. What you want to do is you want to get it through that transition as fast as you can to get a new operational entity in. At the same time, we want to keep the doors open to make sure that our loved ones and our seniors are being taken well care of. And there's a way to do that, and I think we're now starting to create the ideas. How do we do that without having to put our the state's checkbook, open it up for bad managers? So as we move forward, I remain concerned about what is a transitional effort, because transitional effort may be inconsistent with trying to get the new management in, and obviously helping move patients if that's a last-ditch resort, fair enough. But in most instances, these doors are not going to shut down. In most instances, it's just a matter of the operating entity recognizing that there's really no purpose or room for them to stay in as managers because they're not good at it. And we ought to be moving as quickly as we can to new management.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. Senate file 125. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate file 139, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate file 139, health care pilot project amendment, sponsored by Senator Scott.
There are no amendments. Senate file 139, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, So ordered. Senate File 140, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 140, Kindergarten Attendance, sponsored by Senator Barnard.
There are no amendments. Senate File 140, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 143, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 143, Federal Natural Resource Policy, sponsored by Senator Bebout.
There is an amendment, and I would ask that the reading clerk read in the Cooper Amendment at this time.
Senate File 143, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 20.
Senator Cooper, would you like to move and speak to this amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 143. Mr. President, this is an amendment was just in response to a question that was brought in the committee of the whole about the control mechanism and to be sure that the governor's office had an ultimate say in approving any cost reimbursement that was provided in this section of the act. And this is merely just to bring that home and make sure that that was in the bill, that they had control of those funds. And that was all it was, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, the question before us then is in regard to second reading amendment number 1, Senate File 143. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Any discussion in regard to the bill? Seeing none, Senate File 143. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. My understanding, there is no consent list. We'll go directly into bills on third reading. Senate File 29, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 29, Developmental Disability Services, and Act Relating to Medicaid Program, sponsored by the Developmental Intellectual Programs Committee, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are no amendments. Is there any further discussion on Senate File 29 at this time? Question being called. Senate File 29, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Senate File 29. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 29 has passed the Senate. Senate File 103, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 103, Gillette Madison Water Project Financing and Act Relating to Water Development, sponsored by Senator Hines, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are no amendments. Would anyone like to discuss Senate File 103 at this time? Question being called. Senate File 103, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall a bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
No.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Nicholas, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
Senate file 103, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate file 103 has passed the Senate. Senate file 132, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate file 132, strangulation of a household member, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Senator Hastert, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are several amendments attached, and I would ask that the reading clerk read in the third reading amendment number 1, Senate file 132 at this time.
Senate file 132, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 20.
That is the Case amendment. Senator Case, would you like to move and address this amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 132. Mr. President, very simply, this amendment goes into the penalty and reduces it from a 10-year felony to a 5-year felony. I've been struggling with this legislation, and I've tried to see how it fits into other comparable statutes. And, you know, for example, I've gone through the assault and battery statute, and basically there are several things in this assault and battery. If you have simple assault, including simple assault against a household member, and that includes if having present ability to do so, you unlawfully attempt to cause bodily injury, that is a misdemeanor. For $750, if it's a household member, you can get probation for a year and 6 months and $750, Mr. President. Mr. President, if it's a second offense within the previous 5 years, that penalty goes up to 2 years. And if it's a third or subsequent offense, it goes up to 5 years. There's also an assault called unlawful contact. That's if a person touches another person in a rude, insolent, or angry manner without intentionally using sufficient force to cause bodily injury or recklessly causes bodily injury to another person. That's a six-month misdemeanor, Mr. President. Aggravated assault is where a person causes or attempts to cause serious bodily injury to another intentionally, knowing, or recklessly under circumstances manifest extreme indifference to the value of human life. Mr. President, that one is a 10-year felony. So causes or attempts to cause serious bodily injury to another intentionally, knowing, or recklessly under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life. Well, I try to think about this as if a person is restraining another person. What is that? How does that play in? You know, if you're just holding on to them, maybe in a passion between, you know, a fight that people sometimes have, and then I started to look at kidnapping, Mr. President. And there's different levels of kidnapping. The worst kidnapping of all is where you go and you remove somebody from their residence or their place of business, and you take them and you hold them, and then you hold them for ransom or whatever. That's a 20-year felony, Mr. President. There's also something called felonious restraint. And that's where you're guilty. You restrain another unlawfully in circumstances exposing him to risk of serious bodily injury. That is a 5-year penalty, Mr. President. Then there's a thing called false imprisonment. That's where you unlawfully restrain another so as to interfere substantially with their liberty. That's a 1-year felony, Mr. President. Trying to make all this fit to a circumstance where there's absolutely no bodily harm. I admit it's a terrible crime. There's terror. there is restraint. It has those elements. And now, of course, with the amendment we had the other day, it's got to have the intent to do so. But where does it fit in? Where does it fit in? Because if there's bodily harm, it's going to be aggravated assault, Mr. President, and that's getting into 10-year penalties. So I'm saying let's try 5 years. It seems to fit in the middle, and that's my proposal, Mr. President. Thank you.
Any further discussion on this amendment? Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the problem is, and the good senator is right, that it's probably all over the map. And, you know, this is, does it fall under aggravated assault? Is it heinous enough crime to warrant a 10-year penalty, Mr. President? And so that's, I guess, a policy decision on the body, by the body. Should we send a message and should we look at aggravated assault type of crimes? You know, this is a particular case, and I know there's been a lot of discussion about it. You know, if you take somebody's checkbook and write a check to yourself for $10, that could be 10 years. If you burglarize somebody's car and steal their sunglasses out of their car, that could be 10 years. If you take a key and run it across somebody's car and do $1,000 damage, that could be 10 years. So the question is, you know, for the body, and I know it's a policy decision, and but basically, is this, do you feel this is a serious enough offense to warrant a 10-year felony? I feel it's aggravated assault and should warrant a higher level of crime. Thank you.
Other discussion in regard to this amendment? Seeing, go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, and on in favor of the amendment. Part of the problem is that this crime that we have now is so broadly defined that it may not be aggravated assault. I would agree that if it was aggravated assault, that would be fine. But this is a strangulation that can, under the definition, need not require bodily injury or even serious bodily injury. And so you have to look at these crimes on the full range. And you've got such a broad spectrum of conduct to be swept underneath this bill. You've got to look at both ends. And you have to have something where the punishment does meet the crime. And by definition, the reason why the sponsor wants this bill is because he says there's represented to be a void. And the void is one where there's no injury. Because if you were injured, you'd have aggravated assault. So we're talking generally about the type of crime where there's been no injury. And there will be great debate whether or not that you're just trying to restrain somebody, whether you're trying to wrestle with somebody. And I submit to you, given that wide range of definition, a lower penalty is appropriate.
Other discussion on this amendment? Would the sponsor desire a second time? Question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 132. Would all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Back on the bill. There is a second amendment to third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 132. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that Hastert amendment in at this time.
Senate File 132, third reading amendment number 2, page 1, line 1.
Senator Hastert, would you care to move this amendment and discuss it, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 132 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, members of the Senate, what this amendment does is it you know, listening to the debates, listening to private concerns of a few of you, and working with a fellow colleague on this, trying to, you know, as some of the discussion you just heard on the last amendment being too broad, not having some language. And, Mr. President, on third reading the other day, I was prepared to discuss with you or basically argue for the bill on the elements and showing the elements of what we have in strangulation as it compares to other parts of the statute. And that's what brought me to asking for this bill to be laid back on third reading and spending, some time seeing how to address that in some other manners. And in working this, one of the things, and in discussing the elements of my own, and realizing that, you know, and the other elements that I have for other types of crime, we did add, one of the things that was missing was, and you can argue whether there was a crime really in there, but as outlining and going down the list of elements, that maybe that, you know, having, by at what we're doing here is adding cause bodily injury. And that was really something that was missing from the elements from before, because if you look at murder and other types of, you look at aggravated assault, there is this element that was missing. So it was thought better to add this there into this, and thus more narrowly defining it. So Mr. President, what this is doing is more narrowly defines. And then what was the big concerns and debates that we heard on the floor was other family members, other types of activities that didn't involve the dating relationship. When we looked at other statutes from other parts of the country, that was one of the things that was shown that, you know, really kind of defined it down to dating relationships. So, Mr. President, members of the Senate, what I'm doing here is eliminating anything, any of the definitions from household member that don't directly relate to the dating relationships. So there's portions of it that allow, you know, that that have bring in the concerns of the brother-on-brother type of things. So any of the definitions for household member is what we eliminated those and just really spoke to the types of dating relationships that were raising the concerns. So that's what I'm doing with this amendment, Mr. President. It's more narrowly defining and adding, you know, the discussion on the specific crime.
Thank you. Is there other discussion in regard to this amendment? Seeing none, the question before us, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about the portion of the amendment that deletes the Christensen amendment, second reading amendment, and I was trying to see if the amendment's divisible that way. I don't think it is because they're removing enough of the language, but that language inserts in what's there now with intent to intimidate or terrorize the household member. So you've got to have a clear showing of a criminal intent. And I wonder if we aren't better off with the original language plus the Christensen amendment that passed on second reading as opposed to this new language. And I'm just raising that as a issue for the concern of the Senate, that I think that amendment cured, the second reading amendment cured a lot of the problems with this bill. And I wonder if we aren't, with this proposed amendment, taking a step backward.
Senator Nicholas, this is your second time. Oh, I'm sorry. No, on this amendment, it's your first time. Go ahead, Senator Nicholas, then we'll go to Senator Ross.
Mr. President, it won't make a difference. I'll only speak once anyway. With respect to that issue, what we've gone now back to is a specific intent crime. In the original version, there had to be, the question is, specific intent to what? This corrects that and eliminates the need for the earlier amendment simply because now you have to have a specific intent to knowingly and to create bodily injury. So by creating the intent to do the bodily injury, that solves that issue. And I think this is this language is better. It gets there. The only thing that I struggle with going forward is that the crimes of causing bodily injury and attempting to cause bodily injury are lumped together. And it seems to me your attempts and your causing ought to be in different statutes. But we've already adopted amendment that shrinks the sentencing to 5 years, and so it's moving in the right direction.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while I agree with my colleague with regards to paragraph A in this amendment, I am concerned about the definition of household member in paragraph C of the amendment, in particular, where we make an exception for other adults sharing common living quarters. By accepting that out, and if the intent is to get at these dating relationships, we know very well that many, many people in this state live together, and we don't recognize common law marriage, but we do have many, many people living together, and by accepting out other adults sharing common living quarters, you may have actually deleted or made an exception for that very dating relationship that seems to go on regardless of whether or not we recognize common law marriage. And so I'm afraid by accepting that, you've made it excessively broad.
Other comments? Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm just what we have left, and that's what I was trying to get at here. And I appreciate the comments from the good senator, and I think that my good colleague from Albany County had addressed the concerns or addressed the reasoning for the elimination of the terroristic type, because we are moving this into a specific intent, Mr. President, and then by removing the language for basically trying to get it down to household members. And what we're leaving in here is, of course, the married persons, Mr. President, and this is from our statutes, and they're still, you know, persons living with each other as if married, persons formerly married to each other, persons formerly living with each other as if married, parents of their adult children is eliminated, other adults sharing living quarters is eliminated, persons who are parents is eliminated, persons who are in or have been in a dating relationship, and that's still in. And I believe that, Mr. President, that we're covering what we're doing here is covering the all different types and styles of relationships and the dating relationships that are in the domestic or in the causes in the domestic violence type of situations.
Thank you. Senator Ross, I think this was the second time for the sponsor of the amendment. Question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 2, Senate file 132. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That's a close call. All those in favor of this amendment, please stand.
Stand.
All those opposed, we'll just do a count to see what we've got on the floor.
Yeah, but I'm going to, now it's going to be the big thing.
That amendment has passed. That was the final amendment proposal. Back on the bill, any further commentary, discussion in regard to Senate File 132? Seeing none. Senate File 132, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Anderson.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
Senate file 132 having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the members elected to the Senate. Senate file 132 has failed to pass the Senate. Senate file 144, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate file 144, state-funded construction projects, preference provisions, and act relating to the administration of government, sponsored by Senator Nicholas. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are several amendments. The first amendment is the Nicholas Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read in amendment number one at this time.
Senate file 144, third reading amendment number one, page 3, line 22.
Senator Nicholas, would you like to move and discuss this amendment, please?
I would. Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number one to Senate file 144. Ladies and gentlemen, this amendment just makes a correction where we had responsible, or actually in two places we had reasonable, where it should have been responsible build bidder. The lowest responsible build bidder is a term of art, not the lowest reasonable bidder. So it's just a correction to make sure that we say what we intended.
Further discussion of the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are down to the second amendment on third reading. This is also a Nicholas amendment. Would the reading clerk read amendment number two at this time?
Senate file 144, third reading amendment number two, page 3, line 14.
Senator Nicholas, would you like to move and discuss the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number two to Senate file 144. Mr. President, what this addresses is the issue over on page 3, where what happens when you have not less than 70% of the Wyoming residents or of the subcontractors not being Wyoming residents. So the notion here is that you, all of the Wyoming resident subcontractors come in at a price, suppose 120% of the non-resident competitors. What this amendment does to the folks wanting this amendment through is to say, well, if you get a waiver of that condition from the institution, that you need not have 70% being Wyoming folks, it shouldn't be a complete waiver, because if there's 50 or 30% of the people that maybe there's one outlier out there that's double the price, that shouldn't exempt everybody else. So we're only going to provide the exemption so far as there might be an outlier. Obviously, if they're all over 110% and not a single one of them are under, let's say, the 5% preference, that shouldn't eliminate or the requirement to at least employ those subcontractors that are underneath. So it's saying, look, the waiver's not complete. You still have to go back and look at the list.
Senator Bebout.
I would speak in favor of the amendment to that point. What I want to be sure of is that we don't get in a situation where we're going to allow the client to waive the entire 70% and just do what they want to do, which is the whole purpose of this bill in the first place. And I don't think this interferes with that, but I want to be sure.
Other discussion in regard to this amendment? Question being called. Regard third reading amendment number two to Senate file 144, The Nicholas Amendment, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Any further discussion in regard to Senate File 144? Seeing none. Senate File 144, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call a roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Jennings,
aye. Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 144, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 144 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Hines, would you come forward, please?
Oh, yeah, we have that.
Committee Hull will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 70. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 70, Education Accountability, an act relating to public education, sponsored by the School Finance Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Landon, and Rothfuss. No, Senators Coe and Jennings. Senator Coe, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Cove?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 70. Members of the Senate, if you remember in a previous debate, we discussed the recalibration process. And the recalibration process, of course, is mandated by the Supreme Court every 5 years. And there was created a select committee on school finance appointed by the leadership. This was a different process than the process we went through in 2005. In 2005, we rebuilt the entire model. We developed a model that was transparent where you could see the moving parts. So as we began our debate on recalibration, which we started in April with a tutorial, it became apparent after about a month of this debate that we were probably in the recalibration process focus somewhat on the technical corrections that needed to be made. And you'll see a bill coming over that talks about that process that was passed out of committee today. As we continued that debate, clearly what reared its head was the question of accountability in education. We're spending roughly $1.5 billion a year on education to educate a current ADM of roughly 87,000, actually up from 82,000 4 or 5 years ago. As we began this debate, accountability became probably 75% of our focus, and we met every month starting in April right through December. As we continued this debate, we had indications of creating a design team, but nothing firm, and then it came into, you know, recommendations and reports coming in from the stakeholders, how we could improve accountability. And at our meeting in Casper, that was well attended, and I want to say there's only four members on this floor that were part of that recalibration process. We had a motion made by the good chairman of appropriations over here to come in and create the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act. If we're going to be serious about accountability, let's put it into statute and try to do something about it. So it became apparent that during that fall debate that the committee was uncomfortable with a long time frame for adoption by meaningful accountability by the initial drafts of the bill. So a motion was made at our November meeting to really get into accountability. Let's speed it up. Let's not wait for a year. Let's go ahead and start that process right now. We've got some problems that exist out there. We think there's some issues we can address. So there is a motion to start that process with the core indicators. And actually, the core indicators that we chose at that time were the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. That was scaled back to reading and math. That's where we ended up with the core indicators. In December, we adopted a two-phase bill, and you'll see in this particular bill that there are two distinct phases to it. We eliminated the writing and the addition of principal accountability, and that is the bill that you have see in front of you today. So here's the key points of the outline of what the bill does. First phase. This will be the school-based measurement of student performance using core indicators, those core indicators being reading and math. Those are the two that we chose. So we said we've got to measure those core indicators. So we created, from a statewide assessment, which is currently paused, levels below basic, basic, proficient, and advanced. So beginning in the 2011-2012 school year, the Department of Education computes combined school score weighted average calculations. Now I emphasize school score weighted average calculations of the four performance categories from above. The target score would be 100, which requires that a significant majority of students are at or above proficient. The Department of Education computes the improvement targets for each school by subtracting the school's combined school score from 100 and multiplying that number by 10%. That number with a minimum of 2 points is how much each school must improve the next year. Well, let me say that in the 3.5 hours of testimony that we took, this became a very contentious issue. And you'll see in the Standing Committee Amendment when we move to that, and I think it's appropriate to go to the Standing Committee Amendments after I finish explaining the bill. It was very, very contentious. There was some emotional debate, emotional testimony. It was a particular part of the debate we had on this that was very, very difficult. So as the bill proceeds in Phase 1, 2013-14, if a school fails to meet the targets in the first year, the district reports the causes for failure to the Department of Education, provides instructional programs and strategies at increasing the score, a performance acceleration plan. By November 1st of the first year, the district and the department discuss plan and sufficiency of resources to implement that plan. Then by December 1st, the Department of Education presents to the Joint Education Interim Committee, and the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee, compilation of all the reports, results of the discussions that took place, and analysis of the district's ability to succeed and sufficiency of resources in place. The second year and subsequent year, this is still all part of what we're talking about in Phase 1. A technical assistance team, in conjunction with the Department of Education, goes into that particular district and develops a turnaround strategy that the district must implement in the next school year. Department of Education assists in the implementation and, if necessary, may impose criteria on district allocation of resources. How are they spending their money? Why isn't it working? By December 1st, the Department of Education reports back to the Joint Education Interim Committee and the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee. And then the State Board can get involved, if need be, in district accreditation process. 2013-14, moving forward, if the district meets its target, it continues to receive an unrestricted block grant. The results and other information combined for a basis of statewide system for reporting on progress of state education achievement compared to the established targets. Now, the state superintendent, the department, the state board, and the school district duties are defined as follows. This phase one approach requires the state superintendent to make rules regarding the accountability system. It requires the Department of Education to collect assessment results and to establish longitudinal data systems linking student achievement. Now, this is key. We're going to link student achievement with teachers and principals of record. It requires the state board to implement and enforce the accountability system and require school district adherence to this system. District boards must require district superintendents. Now, this is really another key because we've had this discussion on the floor already, to evaluate each principal's performance and provide written reports to the state board. Phase two kicks in. Now, this was a part of the bill that we found pretty much across the board support on. It creates the Select Committee on Statewide Education Accountability. Now, the way that's structured, that select committee will consist of four members of the Wyoming Senate appointed by the president, of which one is the chairman of Senate Education, four members of the Wyoming House, of which one is appointed by the speaker, one to be the co-chairman, and the chairman of Senate Education and the chairman of House Education shall serve as the co-chairmans. So, we have created in phase two, first of all, this select committee. Then it goes in and provides for an advisory committee to assist the select committee, two members of which are appointed by the governor May 1st, 2011. Here's the structure of the advisory committee. One member who is the superintendent of a Wyoming school district. Two members who are school principals from a Wyoming school district, one of which is a secondary school principal, one an elementary. One member who is a Wyoming school district assessment director. I'm actually not quite sure what that is, but I'm going to find out before we go to second reading. Two members who are Wyoming public school teachers, one from an elementary school and one from a secondary school, and you'll see an amendment that addresses this particular section. One member who is serving as a trustee on a Wyoming School District Board of Trustees. That makes sense. One member serving on the Wyoming State Board of Education. A representative of the Department of Education designated by the state superintendent. A representative of the governor's office designated by the governor. And as you'll see in the amendment, we add one more member if the Senate approves it, which is a representative of the business community appointed by the governor. And you'll see that in the standing committee amendment. So this select committee, what exactly are they going to do here? The select committee is required to review phase one. In that criteria is the appropriateness and the rigor of the achievement levels. They're to review necessary modifications to the statewide student assessment, PAWS. We all know the discussion on PAWS. What's going to happen with PAWS? The assessment part of phase one is the really, really huge part, and you're going to see what appears to be two huge committee of the whole amendments, when in fact we come back with a different system to offset the significant opposition that we saw in our 3.5 hours of testimony. Review and improve the reporting scale for measured achievement. Prescribe computation of assessment scores to ensure fair and equitable application. And review methods for computing annual change in student performance as compared to the targets that we have out there. Now, to the select committee, they need to establish components of effective teaching and administration. Emphasize administration, not just about the teachers here. Structure statewide system for measuring teacher and administrator effectiveness tied to consequences and incentives. Include in the accountability system a component that provides recommendations on student and parental accountability. And boy, if there was one thing we talked a lot about, this whole thing we discuss in education is also about parents. How do we bring them into the mix? I'm not quite sure how to do that, but I tell you, it's a big discussion item. Parental responsibility. Then to submit recommendations to the legislature for consideration in the 2012 budget session. As you'll see in the original bill, there's a $75,000 appropriations in there for the LSO work, and that kind of completes a quick and dirty explanation of Senate File 70. It was a bill that had tremendous input into it in the interim. It's already had tremendous input into it in the public testimony process. There is two standing committee amendments, and at this time, Mr. Chairman, I think it's appropriate to move standing committee amendment number one and have it read in.
The reading clerk will please read in standing committee amendment number one to Senate File 70.
Senate File 70, standing committee amendment number one, page one, line six.
Senator Cove.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment, and for an explanation of that amendment, I would defer to Senator Rappas.
Senator Rappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 was an amendment that I proposed in committee. It addressed a number of concerns that we heard from testimony, in particular some of those that my good colleague from Park County addressed in a scoring system, which we'll go through in a little bit more detail, in the approach to looking at the results or the outcomes of that scoring system, and in a weighting system. But through our consideration following testimony, we found that the approach that was taken by Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to promulgate some rules by the 2011 to 2012 school year were going to be intractable for the Department of Education. So we worked, some of the members on the committee, together to come up with the Committee of the Whole amendments that we'll be introducing in a little bit. So while I was the prime sponsor of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, I would encourage the body to reject Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and support, hopefully in the future as we go through them in more detail, the Committee of the Whole amendments. The intent that we were trying to accomplish with Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Mr. Chairman, are accomplished in different ways and with different methods through the Committee of the Whole amendments that we'll be discussing. So with that, I would, unless there's any objection, call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and urge the body to reject Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 so that we can have a clean look at the Committee of the Whole amendments that we're bringing forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on Standing Committee Number 1? Senator Coe.
I think the process as it works, I think that we need... I'm going to suggest that the body support the Standing Committee Amendment, because I believe as we come in with the Committee of the Whole amendments, they stand on their own. And there are two big amendments coming, and the good senator from Albany County is exactly correct. We do come in with a whole new system, But with this amendment, we have taken that scorecard approach out of the bill. And that's what I think happened with the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'd urge that you support the Standing Committee Amendment, and then we'll come back in and deal with what's in the other Committee of the Whole amendments, which are significant.
Senator Roberts.
Mr. Chairman, the first part of the Committee of the Whole amendment will actually kill the Standing Committee Amendment regardless. So as long as we support that, I think it's going to work out either way we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion on Senate Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 70, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I think there is a second Standing Committee Amendment, and I'd ask that that be read in.
Reading clerk, please read in Senate Standing Committee Amendment number 2.
Senate File 70, Standing Committee Amendment number 2, page 21, line 23.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 70. What this does is ensure that those folks that are serving on these committees that are neither state employees or legislative employees will be able to be compensated for their service.
Discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 2. Question been called for. All in favor of Standing Committee, Senator Nicholas' motion that Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 70 pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. President Anderson.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk for the morning. Senator Burns, before we ask for that motion, go ahead.
Mr. President, having voted on the prevailing side, I asked for a vote on reconsideration on Senate File 132.
There's been a request for a reconsideration on Senate File 132. We will then ask the non-debatable motion, the reading clerk, to call the roll in regard to the vote request for reconsideration, Senate File 132.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
No.
Americh.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
No.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Bonflatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
No.
Closing vote.
Meyer,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
By your vote, Senate File 132 has gained reconsideration. The Chief Clerk will now call the roll in regard to Senate File, final reading of Senate File 132.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Meyer.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
By your vote, Senate File 132 has gained the majority.
Landslide.
Has gained the approval of the majority members of the Senate, and Senate File 132 has passed the Senate. Now, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe our desk is clear.
Mr. President, before I make the appropriate motion, there's a couple of announcements. That, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, today is our luncheon with regard to Salad by Committee that the staff puts on for us, and we'll be doing that. I've been asked by Senate staff to announce that leadership and committee senators who may have a meeting at noon to that they should go through the line first. With that, Mr. President, I would move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Are there any announcements? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet in 15 minutes after this noon recess up in S-18 to consider the following bills. House Bill 176, Nuclear Energy is Carbon-Free Renewable Energy, and House Bill 129, Engrossed Nuclear Energy Production Study.
Other announcements? Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, the committee can meet for 2 seconds after lunch.
Other announcements. Everyone's hungry, I guess. You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. We stand at recess until 2 p.m. today.
Yeah, I'm coming for the salad.